Hello and welcome to another episode of The Average Critics, joined as usual by Obi. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Made your way back from the Emirates in quite quick fashion.
Yeah, we got quite lucky, to be fair, because there was supposed to be a tube strike, but it got cancelled last minute, hopefully.
So Did you leave early?
We left as soon as the second goal went in, there was like about 30 seconds left.
Oh, okay. That's fine. So, not tons of film news or trailers that I can think of. Although we do have Echo coming out this coming week. They're dropping all episodes at the same time. I think it's five.
Is that only five episodes?
I think so.
All right.
I might be wrong. But it doesn't convey a load of trust in the series. They also keep pushing the fact that it's TVMA, you know, like a mature thing, which, again, if that's what you're marketing it as, I don't know.
Did they say, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I'm not going in with high expectations.
Neither am I. Didn't they confirm that the Daredevil Netflix series is canon too?
Yeah, I'm not mad at that, because obviously, you know, that presumably means that things like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, it'd be silly for them to throw away all of that narrative and character building, because it just means they'd have to do it again and piss off an audience that really liked it. I think they're probably leaning into the what's his face, Wilson Fisk Daredevil thing more than the character of Echo.
I heard a rumour.
That's a Umbrella Academy. What are you going to get me to do?
I heard a rumour that the planned storyline with Wilson Fisk is that he's basically eventually going to become mayor of New York, and he's going to basically ban superheroes vigilantes in like the state of New York, while also hiring like supervillains to kill all of like the current vigilantes and heroes in New York, which I think sounds pretty cool, potentially, you know.
Yeah, interesting. So that's what Spider-Man, Hawkeye,
Daredevil.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I presume that they're going to use this as a sort of backdoor pilot into Daredevil Born Again.
When's that coming up?
Well, they scrapped what they were originally doing, weren't they? I think it was supposed to come out in 2025, but as far as I have heard, they haven't, you know, they're rewriting it, so yes, interesting. I think it's going to be 18 episodes, so presumably it was going to take quite a while to produce anyway. But yeah, I mean, on the subject of Marvel, as we always are, how far into season 2 of What If are you?
I believe I've watched the first 3 episodes. So I think the first one was like, what if Nebula was part of the Nova Corp?
I've seen the first 3 as well.
Okay, cool.
What if Peter Quill attacked Earth's Mightiest Heroes?
Yep.
And then what if Happy Hogan saved Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we've seen the same. What do you think? I quite like the Nebula one. It had quite a few Marvel characters. I was like, oh yeah, it's nice that you're back. You didn't expect your Jude Laws and Peter Serafinowicz's to come back. Howard the Duck was quite interesting, but I don't know, just sort of, I can take or leave them.
I'm in a similar boat. I think that the first episode it felt like Blade Runner-y, which I thought was a pretty cool concept. I guess I would say that I enjoyed it, but I don't think it wasn't like anything to write home about, in my opinion. The second episode, I found a bit more interesting, because that's kind of like a what if story that I think I care more about, in all honesty. The whole Peter Quill situation. And it was like, Avengers, but in the '80s, which is also pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool. And yeah, and then the third episode, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't care for at all.
It was trying to do like a Die Hard thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't really care for it. I can't lie. It was fine. Like, it felt like most of the What If episodes from last year. They were okay. Like, none of them were like, for me, apart from like the Doctor Strange one, that was the one that stood out for me last year. Apart from that, the rest of them I thought were just fine. And so far, I think these are just fine. Like, they're not anything special or anything crazy. My comparison for this is like Star Wars Visions, which I think takes bolder risks, both in terms of storyline and in animation, animation style. And because like these Marvel ones, that like these What Ifs, they are literally, you can do whatever. Like, it literally doesn't matter, you can do anything. I kind of find the stories so far to be, have been a bit, I don't know, a bit tame.
Yeah, and they're kind of like only slight variation. I think we said this about season one. Only a very slight variation on what actually happened. It's kind of like, what if Tony Stark had ginger hair? Like, ooh, you know, the only ones, like you said, the Doctor Strange one and the zombies one, like that's like, okay, cool. This is different. This is these heroes in a different situation, or, you know, rather than just Captain Carter is Captain America. Okay, fine. It's not that different. It's the same story, but with Captain Carter. And also, I've seen kind of just been looking ahead to what some of the others coming up. Captain Carter features really heavily in this series.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of like, what does Hayley Atwell have over you?
Yeah. I don't mind it, again, but just tell me an interesting story. And I know they did this thing last season where they weaved it all together into, like, you know, the Guardians of the Multiverse. Fair enough. I mean, the concept of that was pretty cool, I guess. But now my thing is, like, how can you top that this year? How can you make that concept better, kind of thing? And, yeah, I think this is one of them shows where, like, I will watch it because it's available. I will get to it when I get to it. But I'm not like, if they said, oh, it's cancelled off season 2, I'd be like, okay, sure. I think the concept of them kind of, they released it during the Christmas period, like one day after the other. That was a pretty cool thing of them to do, kind of like leading up until New Year's Eve. But yeah, I just can't, the series just doesn't grab me. It never has. I don't know.
Well, one of the episodes which I'm interested to watch is What If Kahori Reshaped the World? And I think Kahori is a character that they've created just for this series. So that's the sort of thing. It's like, oh, there's a new hero because of whatever change in, you know, the butterfly effect. So that's... But yeah, like you said, I'll get to it when I get to it. I'm not too bothered. On the subject of things I'm not too bothered about, let's talk about Rebel Moon. So this is Zack Snyder's pitch to Disney for a Star Wars film, which they rejected for being, I think they said, too dark.
Yeah.
Although on the basis of watching this, I'm not entirely sure where that came from. He's now got it produced by Netflix. Somehow got away with various copyright laws, and has produced Rebel Moon, which is Star Wars film in everything but name. I know you kind of talked a bit about it last week, didn't you, about the general plot and stuff, so we won't go over that again, but I guess we can talk about it in more detail. So one thing that really stuck with me about what you said about it is that it's basically and I'm paraphrasing, a series of, you know, events with very little connective tissue. And that is incredibly accurate. There were points in this where they were now kind of trying to recruit another member of their team.
Mm.
And I was like, when did we get here? Why are they trying to get this person? Particularly...
The woman with the spider.
Yes, that's exactly it. I was like, did I, like, fall asleep for a bit? Or... Because...
Yeah.
She was just there, and that woman doesn't speak at all, really, which is a really kind of insidious trait that a lot of Asian characters tend to have, is that they're just silent and then they kick ass. But that Spider-Woman, I was like, what is going on? This was, and the guy that had to tame the dragon, which was so easy. Everything felt really easy in this film, which I don't like it when that happens, because there's no tension whatsoever. It was pretty predictable in pretty much every part of it. You know, from when Ed Skrein turns up, you know he's a villain, and you know he's like, "Oh, we'll have this equitable partnership." No, you won't. And then he kills Corey Stoll's character. Yes, well,
that's what I've seen, though. I liked it, but yeah,
that was fine. You know, but a lot of it was just a bit, very one-dimensional. All the characters are one-dimensional. Like, I couldn't give a flying fuck about any of them.
It's the thing. So, like, can you, apart from the main character, who I know, whose name is Korra, can you name any of the other characters?
General something or other.
Right.
Which is Jimon Honsu's character.
Yep.
No.
Yeah, that's bad. That's a bad sign.
One was called Blood Axe. I think that's Ray Fisher's
character. Yeah.
But again, so like all of these characters, they kind of collect these Avengers of the Mother World, all these rebels who, actually, all they're really doing is trying to defend a village. They're not actually trying to destroy the Mother World or whatever it's called. I don't know if I missed it, but I'm not entirely sure if we saw the person that killed the king and queen. Because they talk about, they were betrayed by someone close to them.
Yeah, no, they don't say. But I'm assuming I assume that's Korra, but I don't know for sure.
I kind of felt that as well. Or the person who's her father figure. But yeah, so, you know, there's that scene towards the end where all of the people are captured, and then Ed Skrein basically has a whole kind of 5 minutes of exposition where he says, "Oh, you're the really feared warrior, Titus, and you're the prince." Was that prince, someone or
other? Is that like Suicide Squad?
Yeah, it's like, this guy's a prince. Well, all he did was tame a dragon, and then like, again, was silent for the rest of it. Like, there didn't seem to be any actual point to why any of these characters were recruited to. And then the funniest bit was Ray Fisher's character, where he does that like sacrifice thing. And it's like, well, you've been on screen for 2 minutes, mate. I'm not invested enough in your character for you to be sacrificed. And he seemed to just have issue with some nameless pilot. Like, I don't know. I was just sort of like, none of it worked. It was really predictable, really boring, and couldn't give a toss about any of the characters. That's just, and the thing I guess that Netflix are banking on is this director's cut. But actually, you know, there might be a few more scenes. Is it gonna, do I want to sit through that again to find out what those scenes are? Not really. And the R-rated cut, well, okay, I mean, I can tell where the blood's going to be, mostly in that scene where Korra beats up those blokes for trying to assault the woman. You know, there's definitely a few times where she was, like, shooting someone in the head and there was not a single mark on their head. And you think, well, they've clearly edited out or not bothered to put in post-production, like, blood splatter. So, yeah, I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd like it. I actually, it's not a good film by any, it's not a good film by any stretch of the imagination, but I still enjoyed it. And I think I liked it for more what I thought it could have been rather than for what it was. Cause I think the bare bones are there for a half decent sci-fi film. But he just kind of took all of these different tropes and all of these different, like, character, not even character arcs, just characters, I guess, and put them in his film, but didn't bother to kind of like develop any of them. Like you say, you don't care about any of the characters or what they're doing or their purpose. Like your main character is a former Nazi, and like for lack of a better word, former Nazi, and you don't really care about her arc, her story, her journey, her anything. Her friend from the farm is an idiot, and you don't really care about him. You don't care about their potential love interest, connection, whatever. You've got fake Han Solo. You don't care about him either. He, a character who just all of a sudden went, oh, yeah. Like, it was the most obvious heel turn in the history of heel turns. Like, he just said, like, some random line, like, 80% of the way into the film. I think it was just, like, just before they went to the... And then he trapped them. And I was like, you've not been like this at any point during the film, and now all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm really for the cause, da 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 da. I'm like, look, what? Like,
that's the thing. So that scene where he and Cora are talking on the bridge of the ship, up to that point, I was actually thinking in my head watching it, I was like, I actually don't think Charlie Hunnam has spoken since he was introduced. And then all of a sudden, like you say, he's like, oh, I just need to have this one stop to drop these supplies off. And I was like, oh, they've given him some lines. And I was like, maybe they'll give some lines to the other characters. And actually, they don't.
Well, this is the thing. So when after... So they... This... Again, this is such bad filmmaking. But when a character gets introduced and picked up, as soon as they've been picked up and joined the team, they just don't get lines for the rest of the film. Which is fucking weird. And then Jarman Honsu comes in at the end and he gives like this speech about, oh, they'll remember what we did here today. And I was like, where the fuck were you? You weren't even here, you joker. They picked you up, gave you a bath, and you haven't spoken for the past 35 fucking minutes.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the obvious, which is, you know, money.
Yeah.
What are these actors actually signing up? Why did they join this? There didn't seem to be anything in it for them. Like, none of the actors, you come out of it going, oh, they did a good performance. Like, Charlie Hunnam has a really dodgy Northern Irish accent.
Mm.
Ray Fisher has his, you know, really contrived hero moment, which doesn't pay off. Ed Screen's all right, to be fair. I quite like him.
I enjoyed his character.
He relishes being a villain. Definitely came out the better between him and Michael Hussman, the two Dario Naharises. But yeah, you know, Jimon Honsu's a good actor, and he's this general that, you know, the last person that went to see him got beheaded, and yet Cora goes there and is like, hey, let me sober you up, and he's like, yeah, cool, cheers. Just not
I can only think that in whatever director's cut or extended version of this film is that there is more, like, interaction between the characters. There is more character development. If there isn't, then I have to think, like, what the hell is going on? Like, if there's no, like, character development in this extended version, which I assume is going to be quite a bit longer than this version, then you have to question, like, this whole filmmaking process, to be honest.
But what I also don't understand, and I think I did mention it last week, Netflix are known for their, like, you know, a bit, just, I guess, laissez-faire approach of like, hey, we're giving you this money, we trust you as a creative, do what you want. Yet we've got this situation where Zack Snyder, who is divisive, but, you know, not guarantees you money, but is, you know, quite a box office kind of
he's got a fan base for sure.
Yeah, exactly. He's relatively bankable. You're giving him a two-part franchise to launch a franchise, and yet you're telling him that he has to do a PG-13 cut, and then you're saying, but you can release your director's cut. No, I'm sorry, you should just give him the you know, why just let him do his vision? Because actually, what you're doing, this film has not been well received. You're basically tanking your franchise because you're cutting it to pieces potentially and trying to make it this broad appeal, where Netflix, yes, it has age restrictions, but it's not the same as going to the cinema and not being allowed entry because you're not over 17 for an R-rated film. So it doesn't make sense. And even if this had a very mild theatrical release, is it enough to, you know, warrant them having this cut? Because actually it's a 15 in the UK, so it's still not hitting that 12A category here. It just doesn't, to me, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, Zack Snyder's talked about wanting to do a trilogy of trilogies or something like that. And it's like, well, I don't think you're going to get there, mate, because unless the Stargiver is elite.
Yeah. Unless part two is absolutely amazing, then yeah, I reckon this unfortunately, this franchise will die a death, which is a shame, because I feel like, do you know what it is with Zack Snyder? I think he needs to team up with somebody who's a more capable writer. I think. So, because, like, I think his, like, concepts and, like, because I think some of, like, the, I would say, I think some of the shots in the film, some of, like, the concepts of, like, the machinery and stuff like that, I thought was pretty cool. Some of, like, the weapons I thought were pretty cool. Quite in, like, what's it called? Some of, like, the aliens and stuff like that I thought were really cool. And that's all well and good, like, to look at, but you have to be able to write a story around that. And it kind of just felt like with Zack Snyder, he's like, oh, I've got an idea for how this is going to look and how that is going to look and how that's going to look. But then he's got no think about, he doesn't think about, okay, I need to write, you know, a story around this stuff that then I can flaunt all this cool visual stuff that I want to show. So yeah, I feel like he just needs to get someone to assist at the very least with, you know, screenwriting.
Can you remember one shot in it that you thought was impressive?
I actually thought there was one of the opening shots with Gakora when she's mowing the lawn or whatever, and that big fat moon behind her. I thought that was a pretty cool shot.
I think I know what you're on about. I thought most of the first 15, 20 minutes looked really amateur.
Really?
Like, to the point where I was like, I can tell you're on a soundstage because there was almost zero depth to the actual background. Like, it looked like she was mowing the lawn in front of a projected image of Saturn or whatever it was supposed to be. And then particularly the village, you're looking at it and you're seeing, like, you know, in, like, if you go to the theater and they try and give the impression of depth by staggering some of the buildings, it looked like that. And I was like, God, this is awful. And I thought, what the fuck is the budget for this? But £20, and, you know, I mean, none of the visuals in terms of, like, VFX looked bad, but I just thought the set design or whatever it was just really poor.
I thought. And sorry, go on.
So one last thing, unless you trigger something else in my mind, is what I didn't get is that they're clearly, you know, some sort of medieval type village in space, yet all of their doors are, you know, electronic. No sense to me. Using those primitive tools, yet they go on a spaceship and then all of their doors open upon, like, sensors. And it's just
I think the tools thing didn't Corey Stiles' character make a point of, like, oh, we like to do this shit ourselves so that we feel closer to the Earth or something like that.
Like, it's just, I don't know. That thought was really, really bad.
I will say, okay, I'll list the things that I thought were good. Because I actually didn't hate it. I thought I enjoyed myself watching it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I was just too excited or something. I don't know. But like I say, I liked some of the visuals. I thought that, is it Ed Skrein? Is that his name? I enjoyed his character. I thought he was like just villainy. You know, I thought he was really cool. There's a couple of, I feel like, callbacks to, I feel like it's a bit Inglourious Bastards-y. That his scene, his opening scene, which I enjoyed. I thought that the part where I thought some of the production design was pretty cool as well, like the people's clothes and some of the armor and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. I enjoyed like the lore of it all. I enjoyed, like, oh, we had a king and they did this and they did that. No, now we fight for this and now these people fight for that. I enjoyed all that stupid shit. I quite liked the when Cora's telling, like, her backstory and, like, how she was picked up by by the guy, and then became like the best, basically like the best Nazi, the best Nazi ever, basically. And then like when they have like the slow mo, I hated the slow mo, but I like the slow mo in that scene where they're like, in the snow and her partner's just died and she's just going for it, and then she plants the flag. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought the VFX for the Davy Jones looking character was pretty cool. The one who gets bashed in the head later on. And I actually thought the last scene with Ed Skrein, and like when he's like basically brought back to life, and then he transports to the talking to the dad guy, and then when he's finished talking to him, he like falls back into the water and then back into the pool. I thought that whole sequence was pretty cool as well. Didn't really understand what was happening, but I thought it was pretty cool to look at.
It was a bit of Matrix, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. It was, to be fair. Now I think about it. And this is the thing. Zack Snyder just pulled from loads of, like, iconic shit.
you're invoking films that are better than this film. And that is not a good sign. When you're going, oh, yeah, this is like The Matrix, but The Matrix did better. This is like Inglourious Basterds. That's a much better film. You know what I mean? It's like, you can reference things, but if you're doing so and it just makes you realise how poor this film is, and that's not a good thing.
That's fair. I will say that I will watch if and when they release the director's cut, I will watch it. And when they release part two, I'm going to watch that as well, just because I'm curious to see where the story's going to go. You know, but
well,
I appreciate that it is not a good film.
I will defer to you when you've watched it. You can let me know if it's worth doing so.
I'm going to tell you this, even if it's not.
I think that I'll probably watch the second one just because I'm like a completionist, but if they start actually producing the third and fourth or whatever, then unless you're telling me it's worth my time, then I mean, I went in this with low expectations because you told me I wouldn't like it, and I still really didn't like it.
I will say as well, I think it's a bit, and again, I don't know how the whole director's cut aspect of this works, but I think it's a bit exploitative to put out, like you say, you've got free reign, it's Netflix, for you to put out this film and say, oh, by the way, we're also putting out director's cut. I think that's quite exploitative of the fans, and his whole thing is like the Snyder cut, that's his thing, and I feel like he's taking advantage of that. Or maybe it's him, or maybe it's Netflix, I don't know, but someone's taking advantage of it, I think.
And if he's the director who notoriously has director's cuts, which probably means that he's quite inefficient. If your studio is consistently telling you that you need to reduce the length of your film, then that's the problem with him and his ability to convey a message. If you can't convey a decent film in less than 3 hours.
Yeah, if you need over 3 hours to tell a proper story, then I feel like you're not a very good storyteller.
And that's the thing, right? I feel like I'm beating this film, but it's, you know, worth it. I don't think any of the Star Wars films are, well, this was 134 minutes. I would be surprised if many of the Star Wars, maybe the last couple, are pushing 2.5 hours, but they convey so many stories so much more coherently with as many characters, if not more, where you actually care about them, and they've done it on multiple occasions, because every trilogy they're introducing new people that you're supposed to care for. And, you know, it's not that Zack Snyder doesn't have previous working with ensemble casts, because Army of the Dead has one, and, you know, the whole DC universe, Watchmen, he could do it. He's just not done it well here. Yeah. Anyway.
Just quickly then, who was your least favourite character in the film?
You might as well ask me who my favourite character was, because...
Yeah, fair.
they were all so forgettable. Yeah. And it's not their fault, because they didn't have anything to work with. My favourite character was that little snail thing that puppeted the bloke in the cantina.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. But other than that, couldn't tell you. This film was also oddly, like, weirdly sexual.
It was.
There was the two kind of attempted assault scenes, and then there's...
Well, she was fighting when Cora was fighting. That after that attempted rape, which in and of itself as an inciting incident for the whole thing is a bit weird, but when she's fighting, I was just like, bare boob shots. I'm like, relax, bruv. And it was in slow-mo as well. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. It's just unnecessary. And then there's Ed's green character getting sort of like tentacled, which was a bit odd.
Yeah, what was that about as well?
I don't know. Maybe that's why Disney were like, no, thank you.
What was the thing? I remember that thing come up and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like the whole tentacle thing. I was like, what the hell's going on? And then we just never see the tentacle thing again. I guess it's because he's maybe part robot or something. Maybe. But I'm like, what? Like, I was just thinking, like, in several, like, again, we should probably wrap this up, but still, several points throughout this film, I was thinking, like, who edited this and thought that it made sense? Like, there's multiple points where I'm like, you're just doing stuff and not explaining what's happening. Like, that scene, like I said, the scene with the woman and the spider, like, they just turn up to that place. No explanation whatsoever. The woman fights the spider, and then it cuts to the next scene and she's on the ship. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Oh, God.
And it's just bad editing, really.
I didn't really understand many of the characters' motivations for wanting to be part of it. I mean, you get, like, that bloke who, you know, had his debt that he worked off. And the bloke was like, oh, well, I'll wipe it off if you can do this. Okay, fine. And then look what happens. He did it. And he's now bound to them. Like, what? Oh,
when the guy, the guy who owned him, when he trained the animal or whatever, and then obviously the animal turned on him and killed him, I was like, that's quite actually kind of raw. I was kind of bad for that guy. Like, he made a deal and he got fucked over. But, yeah.
Well, according to Wikipedia, right, that character, Tarak, which I didn't know that was his name, he's a nobleman turned blacksmith with the ability to bond with animals of nature. Now, is that purely there because he bonded with this dragon in a scene that invokes How to Train Your Dragon and Avatar, both of which did it better?
And Harry Potter.
And Harry Potter, exactly. Or are they just saying that because that's actually part of his character? I don't know. But it wasn't, I mean, wasn't apparent any other time.
No, it wasn't.
Anyway, we'll stop talking about Rebel Moon if the director's cut comes out. And we watch it, we would talk about it. Otherwise, wait till the Skullgrave comes out next year, I think. But from one...
I think it's this year, actually. Sorry, it comes out.
Okay. From one film with odd sexual scenes in it to another. Are you going to watch Saltburn?
I probably will, yeah. But you can talk about what happens. I don't...
I won't spoil it for you.
Okay.
Because it is a film that... could be spoiled.
Okay.
This is, I think it's the second film by Emerald Fennell, who previously did Promising Young Woman with Carey Mulligan, if you watched that, which came out a couple of years ago. That was about, it was basically, I remember talking about it, it was like a modern take on a rape revenge film.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. It's a really good film. So this is her follow-up. I say that she might have done others, but I'm only aware of the other one. This stars Barry... I have no idea how to say his surname. Keegan? Keoghan? Jacob Elordi, Rosamund Pike, Richard E. Grant, and a few others. This is set in 2006, for which I think the only reason is that you could still legally smoke inside at that point. It seems to happen quite a lot. But anyway... So this is set in 2006. Barry Keoghan's character, Oliver, has just joined Oxford Uni, where he is like a, you know, typical nerd. He's from Merseyside, so he's presented as this sort of financially restricted, shall we say, person, in amongst all this opulence and kind of, you know, upper class, basically for the Tories. Jacob Elordi plays Felix, who's this kind of royal adjacent person, very well to do, ladies man. He's there with his cousin, Farley, who was their very wealthy family. Oliver basically is a loner until he helps Felix with his bike, because his bike has a puncture, and he's like, oh, you can just borrow mine, and they become friends off of that, and Felix treats him really nicely. He's aware that they're from different worlds financially, but, you know, is nice about it. He's sort of like, he says his friends peer pressure him. He's like, oh, it's your round, and he goes to the bar, but Oliver doesn't have any money, and he's trying to, like, say to the barman, I'll pay you later, and Felix comes up and goes, oh, mate, and they all talk like that. Oh, mate, you've just dropped this 50, I found it. And he's like, oh, no, it's not mine. He goes, no, definitely saw it fall out of your wallet, mate. So, yeah, anyway, they become good friends. And Oliver is invited to Felix's for the summer at their house called Saltburn, which is a very well-to-do manor house, which has footmen and, you know, staff. His parents, Felix's parents, are there, played by Richard E. Grant and Rosamund Pike, and his sister is also there, Venetia. The cousin, Farley, is also there, and Farley and Oliver, well, Farley doesn't like Oliver, and it becomes apparent why. But, yeah, it's at that point it gets a bit, it's a bit darker, a bit weirder. I will talk around it. So Oliver seems to have, he seems to sort of be infatuated with various members of Felix's family, including Felix himself. He kind of spies on Felix in the bath whilst Felix is having some alone time, and then proceeds to lick bath water after Felix has left. And there's various other slightly transgressive sexual things that happen, and I won't go into more detail. But yeah, there's it's very difficult for me to talk about it without giving things away, so I won't say anything else other than it is kind of like a film noir in a sense. Which is a lot more apparent once you've seen the whole film. It's also responsible for Murder on the Dance Floor by Sophie Ellis Bechdel going back into the charts, which is a bit of a throwback. But yeah, I really, really liked it. It's transgressive, I think, is a good word to use for it. It's really well acted. It's one of those where it shines a light on class difference, but how, like, none of the well-to-do characters are really unlikable. They're all actually very likable, but they just say things, and certain, I guess, things that they're not aware of, they'll say things and it comes across really ignorant. But, you know, it's kind of not coming from a bad place in most parts. I was just really kind of engaged in Oliver's character, his relationship with Felix. Rosamund Pike and Richard E. Grant, they are playing like exaggerated versions of, you know, sort of posh people, which is funny. It's darkly comic, I would say. And the kind of, that sounds like such a wanky phrase, but like the visual palette is really interesting. Colourful, it's bright, but there's also real, I don't know, like there's a tenderness to some of it as well, and also most of the posh people are portrayed as maybe a little bit simple or purposefully simple, but yeah, I think you'd really like it. It does have a few really weird scenes. But
isn't there someone licking up jizz?
That's the bit in the bath.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a few others.
Sorry, go on.
Let's just say there's a few others, but have you heard of some of the others?
Well, I saw Barry Keoghan's his nude scene where he's running around the house naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently it wasn't a prosthetic.
Good for him. Solid, solid peen, mate. Solid peen.
Mm. Can't have been cold. But yes, I really enjoyed it. I can imagine it'd be quite polarizing, but I think you would probably appreciate it.
Yeah, I do. I think from the look of it and people who I follow on social media and stuff, including yourself, kind of giving it praise, I think I'm going to like it. But it has been, I've seen a lot of people saying, going the other way and saying, oh, it's not good and stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily know what the criticism would be, other than the fact, well, once you've seen it, we'll talk about it. There's some things that I'm a bit like, but it would be spoiling it to tell you about those. So once you've had a chance to watch it, it's on Amazon Prime. Then
I'll watch it for the next pod.
Cool. Well, there ends what I've seen. So, I want to know about Aquaman 2. I read the Wikipedia synopsis and it didn't seem very interesting. So give us a synopsis, go into spoilers. Is there a post-credit scene? Blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Aquaman 2, The Lost Kingdom.
Coming to a cinema near you.
Coming to a cinema near you. Yeah, basically, it's obviously following Aquaman in the few years since the last film. He's gotten married. He's had a child, Arthur Jr., I believe is his name. And he's king of Atlantis. He basically finds that being king is not all it's chalked up to be. It's boring. And the people, there's like a council of people from all the different kingdoms who won't let him kind of do what he wants to affect change kind of thing. Because he wants to reveal themselves to the land people. And they're all like, nah, 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 nah. Then you've got, what's his name? Yahya Abdul-Mateen. What's his character's name?
Black Manta.
Yeah, thank you. Black Manta, who's obviously hell-bent on finding Aquaman so he can kill him for his revenge for killing his dad in the first film. He's teamed up with a load of scientists, including Randall Park, who himself is more interested in just finding the Kingdom of Atlantis, because obviously for science purposes. They infiltrate some, ice kingdom, like in the sea level or like below water. And in there, Black Manta finds the Lost Trident, or the Black Trident, or something like that, which is basically the long lost trident of the former king of Atlantis's brother. Can't remember the names or anybody, but like I think it's like a direct descendant of. I think it might be like basically Aquaman's like uncle or great uncle or great great uncle or something like that. His descendant, anyway. So then he. When he touches this trident, it kind of like takes over his soul, basically. And he gets like this spirit in his head saying, oh, I'll give you what you want. I'll lead you to this thing, which will help you beat Aquaman. And in return, you can release me from this curse that's been put on me and I'll be free or whatever. So this gives Black Manta, obviously, all this extra knowledge of like the sea world to know exactly where to go, exactly where to look to get all these tools and ships and weapons that they can use to destroy Aquaman. And at the same time, the trident also makes him like really strong and durable, so he can actually fight Aquaman as well. So yeah, they go and attack Atlantis. He was about to kill Mira, and Aquaman was like, "Don't kill my wife!" Da 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 da, and then attacked him and whatnot. And then something, there was like global warming was happening as well because of all of this stuff that Black Manta was. All these weapons that he was getting, it's basically like some nuclear shit, and like he was making all the water like warm, I guess, so people were dying. And then Aquaman was like, "Oh, I don't know anything about any of this." So then they were like, "Oh, we have to go and get Orm." Is it Orm? I think it's Patrick Wilson's character. because he knows everything about the city, blah, 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 blah. So he goes, gets his brother, releases his brother. They have this kind of like bickering, I hate you too kind of relationship. They go through the jungle, all meets a bug. They knock over a bridge, climb over it. They still hate each other. They fight Black Manta. They lose. Whilst they lose, Black Manta reveals to them that what he needs to release the curse for the evil guy is the blood of his descendant. So either Aquaman or Orm or any of them, basically. And he was like, "Oh, you'll never get me." And he was, and they were saying, "Oh, he's like, they're like the last of the bloodline, blah, blah, blah." And they're like, "No, there's one more, obviously his son." So he goes and kidnaps his son, takes him to the Sea World or whatever. And then they go after him, fight, 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 fight. They bond along the way. He says, "Oh, you know, you're still my brother, blah, 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 blah. You know, I love you, da, 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 da." Randall Park has a change of heart, and he had a change of heart like 20 minutes into the film. He's like been trying to like get out of this whole situation, but he's basically been threatened that they would kill him if he didn't like continue helping them. So he's been helping them. He ends up helping save the baby. Boom, they go away. Mira's in there somewhere, here and there and everywhere.
I will ask you about what's her name? Amber Heard.
Amber Heard, yeah. Yeah, she's in there, here and there and everywhere. They get the baby back, they fuck off, and then they have Aquaman has kind of like a fight between him and Black Manta, not really. And Black Manta's about to win. Orm comes in and helps save the day. Black Manta loses all of his power, and then they end up destroying the Trident, which destroys the evil guy and whatnot. And then the whole palace thing that they're in, they're fighting in, like crumbling, turning into rubble or whatever. And then Black Manta falls into like a hole thing. And Aquaman, contrary to the first film where he let him and his dad like let the seed decide or whatever, so he left him to die. In this one, he goes to help Black Manta, and Black Manta's like, "Nah, allow it, fuck you," and then just drops off and kills himself. So yeah, they save the day. Then Orm, who's supposed to go back to prison at this point, Aquaman's like, "Oh, you know, don't tell anyone, but I'm going to let you go, blah, blah, blah." So he goes off and lives his life. And then Aquaman manages to convince all of the other kingdoms, so to everyone, to reveal themselves to the Earth. They have a press conference where he has a whole load of spiel about whatever. I can't remember what it was, don't really care. And then he ends it with like a take on "I am Iron Man" at the end of Iron Man. He says, "I am Aquaman." And then it goes, "Ha ha!" And then the film ends. And then the post-credit scene is a callback to a joke about Orm eating a bug. He's eating a burger, and then he sees a bug, and he's like, "Ooh," puts the bug in the burger and eats it and enjoys the burger a bit more. And then that's it.
Right. Oh, shit.
It wasn't very good, I can't lie. It wasn't terrible. I've seen way worse films. Even this year, I've seen worse films.
Is it worse than The Flash?
No. No, sorry. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is, I think.
It is.
Like, I think it is. I enjoyed The Flash quite a bit more than I enjoyed Aquaman, I would say. But I didn't hate The Flash. I just thought it wasn't great.
To be fair, this film's actually made money. Well, probably not after marketing fees, but it's... The budget was $215 and the box office is $334.
Okay.
Actually, that's probably a mild win for DC.
Yeah. And I think the film is just, the whole film is just a sign of what DC has become at this point. It's like, they just didn't even really bother trying. It felt like, honestly. Like, the film's not exciting. It's boring. It's visually, there's nothing new from the 2018 version. It's all pretty much samey. Underwater effects don't look great. The acting was so.
How much is Amber Heard in it?
She's in it here and there. She doesn't really have that many lines, but you could tell, I think, when watching, you can tell that they chopped and changed and cut her out of quite a bit, I think, anyway. She's probably in a total of about, I don't know, 8 minutes of the film. Of the 2 hours or something, I would say. But it's, yeah, I feel like you can tell they definitely chopped her out of quite a bit of it.
And this is like, I'm pretty sure this film was supposed to come out like 2 years ago, wasn't it?
It was supposed to come out last year. They pushed it back a whole year. Yeah.
Yeah. For what? Like, I don't know. Does it look like there was loads of reshoots, or do you think it was just cutting out Amber Heard?
It didn't look like there was reshoots to me. I think it was. Yeah. I think a big part of it was cutting her role out. But sorry, go on.
No, you carry on.
I was saying, but like, even the stuff that kind of she was, they did leave her in. I was just like, who really cares? Like, it's still just, I don't know. And I think the film's probably not as bad as I'm making it sound out to be. But I think I've just got so much fatigue from DC that, like, I've just come to the point now where I'm like, okay, let's just start fresh, man. Let's just end this. But I wish they could have. This is the thing, because they know that this is the end. Well, you presume they know this is the end of the DCEU in its current form. I feel like even with the post-credit scene, they could have done something to say, like, signed it off, say, yeah, okay, cool, this is the end kind of thing. And instead they just do this, that lame fucking scene with the bug and the burger, and I was like, this is so fucking stupid. Like, you could have at least given us a little something. Like, we've suffered through this for 10 years, and you gave us this. So I was like, you know, sound of what DC have become.
Yeah, and this is like, you know, it's been fairly common knowledge for a while that the DCEU is ending and now it's going to be DCU or whatever. And, you know, these films were made fine, they had to be released, couldn't tax write them off clearly, but again, it's just a lack of foresight or something. If you're resetting your universe and you're actually adapting the Flashpoint narrative, you've missed an absolute sitter there, really. In terms of, you know, Aquaman's in some of the Flash for a brief bit, isn't he, when he's drunk. Doesn't seem to have any relation to what goes on in this film.
No.
You know, you're kind of having various different Batmans in the Flash, none of whom are going to do it moving forward. You just sort of think, what? It's a complete car crash. I know Marvel aren't producing like decent stuff at the moment, but when DC are not even, you know, picking up the baton that's being dropped.
The table, yeah. I do, and again, I said this after the Flash came out, and I'll say it again. How bad must Batgirl have been
yeah.
to release that and then to also release this?
I know. It's a real damning indictment, isn't it? Okay, well, can we have some positive news? Talk about a film that you liked, hopefully.
Sorry, which one am I talking about?
I don't know, I can't remember. Okay. I presume you liked Godzilla, I don't know if you liked Next Goal Wins, can't remember.
Okay, cool. I will, let me talk about Next Goal Wins first. Okay. So Next Goal Wins is a film based off of a documentary of the same name about the American. So I'm going to say, so forgive, actually no, forgive me for anyone who's from the place, the country. If I say Samoa, even though it's actually pronounced Samoa. So they make an American point of that, American Samoa. But if I say Samoa, I apologize. Anyway. So it's about the American Samoa team, who were historically like the worst international team in history. I think they had the worst loss ever in the history of like international football, which was 31-0, I believe. They couldn't even score a goal. And they hire a coach from, I believe in real life is Dutch American, but in the film was played by Michael Fassbender, who has pretty much a British accent, I would say. He's like a hothead coach who's like, couldn't keep a job, blah, 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 on his way out sort of thing. And this is like his last hope to kind of turn his career around or whatever. And they hire him to coach the team and to make sure they at least can score a goal, potentially win a game in the World Cup qualifiers. And the film kind of like goes through, I guess, different aspects of kind of international football, mix that with American Samoa culture and kind of like how that all blends together. So with us, as I will speak for me and you, Glenn, we are from the UK. We love football. Football is a big, big thing in this country. There's a whole culture around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compare that with, and also, actually also, like, when you think about it as well, in this culture, we are, this will tie into it in a minute, we are increasingly more, or sorry, increasingly less involved in structured religion, I would say, as a country as well. In one entity, obviously, there's loads of multiculturalism means there's loads of different religions now, blah, blah, blah. In American summer, everyone's super religious. I think in the whole country, there's only like 50,000 people, but everyone's very religious and everyone takes that religion very seriously. The coach now, Michael Fassbender's character, doesn't get this. So when everyone's like, so they all, everyone goes to church at a certain time of the day on a Sunday, the bell rings across the island and everyone stops whatever they're doing and they pray. And he just did not get it. He was like, why is nobody taking this seriously? Why is everyone, why am I the only one who cares about winning? And they're kind of like of the vibe of like, football's fun. We want out, we're supposed to play it for fun. We know we're not good. So we want to at least be able to kind of enjoy ourselves whilst we're playing. And you got us out here doing drills and suicides and this and that and one touch and blah, blah, blah. We don't want to do none of that. I'm not going to lie. At this point in the film, I felt Michael Fassbender's frustration because they were taking the piss. They hired him to sort the team out. And then everyone in the trailer, everyone was taking the piss. Anyway. But yeah, he just didn't understand the culture. And he didn't want to understand because he, in his mind, he had been forced there to coach. He didn't want to be there. He got fired from his previous job, blah, blah, blah. This is all he had. Do you care if I spoil this or would you?
No, no, no. I mean, I might get around to watching it when it comes on Disney Plus, but.
Cool. In between all of this, they've got like 4 weeks to make to the qualifier against, it's not Tonga, it's, beginning of a T.
Tahiti?
No, it's like it's around that, it's like Polynesian team beginning with a T. Maybe it is Tonga.
It is Tonga, it's around there.
Maybe it's Tonga. Yeah. And he's in between all this, he's like getting messages from his daughter saying, oh, where are you? Stuff like this, blah, blah, blah. He's also separated from his wife and he's struggling to reconcile with that as well. They've been separated for 2 years, blah, 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 blah. They've also got on the American Samoa team, they've got a transgender player, which I thought was they put it in for I don't know, inclusivity. But actually, real life genuinely happened. First,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. First transgender player to play international football or something like that, which is pretty cool. I had no idea that was the thing, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, basically, he after like trials and tribulations, the team hate him, and then he manages to apologise to them. He comes around, he understands the culture, they galvanise themselves as a team, they work together, they get themselves to the World Cup qualifiers, they play against Tonga. Long story short, the first half isn't going well. I believe they concede a goal. He starts going back to his old way. He's getting angry. He's like, ah, fuck this. Gets to half time. He's like, you're all fucking losers, blah, 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 blah. And they're all we're playing shit because you're putting too much pressure on us, coach. Like, chill out. Like, and he's like, fuck this, I'm leaving. Which I, to be honest, I understood. And then the guy, the head of the head of the FA comes out, he's quite a funny character in the film. He comes out and he's like, basically explains the whole culture, like, you know, we're doing this to have fun. We know we're not great, blah, blah, blah. You know, we accept ourselves for who we are. Can you accept yourself? Can you accept yourself? Because we accept you. And that kind of like gets him to turn around. He then comes back into the thing, gives them a big old team speech, reveals basically that his daughter passed away. A couple years prior, and that basically kind of like derailed his life. He didn't really know how to deal with it. His wife left him, and all like through that film, he'd been listening to voice messages, and he thought his daughter was just like calling him and not being able to contact him because of like he's got a shitty phone and time difference and all that. But she actually passed away. And he hadn't been able to deal with it. And basically, yeah, he revealed that, and that kind of like. Him kind of like opening up to the team like that made everyone on the team realise that, okay, yeah, he actually, you know, he trusts us and stuff like that. And yeah, they're able to rally up and they end up scoring a goal and also winning the game. And yeah, so then I think the film ends basically with and I'm gonna come back to some bits once I'm gonna finish the summary of the film. The film ends. They lose their next qualifier, so they don't qualify for the World Cup or anything like that. But they are a better team for it. He leaves the team in the end, becomes a scout for FIFA. The woman who's a transgender player, she becomes like an ambassador for FIFA. I think the guy who's the president of this FA is still president of the FA. The guy who's the goalkeeper is still the goalkeeper for the national team. So yeah. The film itself is written, I believe. Well, not written, but it's directed by Taika Waititi. And it is full of Taika Waititi-ism. His whole shtick, that's what the film is full of. It's like the film is full of a bunch of Korgs from Thor Ragnarok, which is fun at times, but also at times is so stupid. And it's just like he's done this thing where that thing that he does where he throws 50,000 jokes at the wall and hope that a few of them land. And I won't lie, some of them did land, most of them didn't, but the ones that did land really got me. So the guy in particular who's head of the FA is probably the funniest character in the whole film. Actually, you know what? Yeah, he's for sure the funniest character in the whole film. So I'm just going to tell you one joke. Yeah, I was cracking. Honestly, I was crying in the cinema. Michael Fassbender is like pissed off at this point. He's fed up. He goes to meet up with the guy from the FA who works like everywhere because the island's so small. Everyone's got to have multiple jobs, blah, blah, blah. So he works in a restaurant. He works in the airport. He works in the news station. He manages the team, works at the news agents, and he's in the restaurant. And he's like, basically, what the fuck is going on in this country? And he pans to his desk, and he's like, you've got a mouse and a keyboard, but no screen! At which point he takes the keyboard and the mouse and packs them both away. And I was literally, it was me and like four people in the cinema, I was literally crying a lot. Like, it was so stupid. So funny, Glenn, honestly.
Sounds funny from just the way you regaled it. So.
There were a couple of jokes like that where I was dying.
I really like Taika Waititi's humour.
Yeah.
Like,
which is why I think you'll like, at least, I think on a base level, you might not love this one, but on a base level, I think you'll just like it. One, because it's about football, and two, because it's got his humour attached to it as well.
Have you ever seen What We Do in the Shadows?
I haven't, but I've heard that it's really good.
So, if you like that sort of humour, it's so funny, because there's a part where, you know, well, they're vampires, and then they basically have beef with, like, the local werewolves, and they encounter them, like, on the street, and they're like, oh, you know, like, kind of getting, like, leery at each other, and then one of the werewolves is like, yeah, you guys can fuck off, and then the leader of the werewolves goes, hey, we're werewolves, not swearwolves. It's so funny. Funny. Literally, every time I see that film, that joke still makes me laugh.
And yeah, it's the film is littered with that sort of humour. So, I would say I enjoyed it. Again, this is another film. I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's particularly like a good film. I guess it told a story and it did its job telling that story. If his humour's not for you, then obviously I think you probably hate the film, to be honest. But me going in, not knowing anything about American Samoa or anything about their story, I was fairly, you know, entertained. I don't know how much liberties they took. I imagine quite a lot with the storytelling, the way it was told in terms of like humour and stuff. But I enjoyed it, man. I thought it was pretty decent. Yeah. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Well, I will check that out once it's available on whatever platform it comes out on. Mm. Cool. And then Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, yes. Godzilla Minus One, basically follows, it's set in Japan just after World War Two. Like literally as World War II is ending, and it follows one particular pilot who is supposed to be a, what's it called? Basically like a suicide pilot. What they call them, kamikaze pilots?
Kamikaze, yeah.
Yeah, kamikaze pilot. And he's basically, he's a pilot who just wasn't on it. Like, he was like this kamikaze, he, so basically he goes to, he lands on like a beach and says to the guys, the mechanics there, like, oh, can you fix my plane? Da, 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 da. And they were basically like, we know there's not, like, we know there's nothing wrong with your plane kind of thing. And like, we know you're ducking it basically. And he was like, oh, what are you talking about? What are you accusing me of? Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Godzilla then comes out of nowhere. They don't seem very surprised about Godzilla. They were like, oh, yeah, I heard about him. Someone told me about Godzilla last week. And then the Godzilla's just there. Kills them all. And then, well, not all of them, apart from two of them. One of the mechanics, the mechanic blames the guy, the pilot, for his inaction because he told him to get in his plane and start shooting his gun at the Godzilla, and he got in his plane and he melted and he didn't shoot, and because of his inaction apparently loads of people died. Fast forward now, they head back to Japan, and the pilot, everybody, people who see him and recognize people, the one people who recognized him and knew he was a pilot, knew that he like ducked it, basically ducked the kamikaze thing. So they were like, oh, you're dishonorable, you're this, you're that, we lost the war because of people like you, you should have died out there, blah, 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 blah. So he feels like a failure. He was like, he's betrayed his country, he feels like he's a piece of shit, doesn't deserve anything, blah, 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 blah. He then meets this woman who took a baby that wasn't hers because the mother of the baby was dying and asked her to take the baby. So now she's looking after this baby. She runs into him. They get in cahoots, I guess, and they start living together and raising the baby. They kind of fall in love, sort of, kind of, not really. He ends up getting a job. Disarming bombs from the war in the sea. Godzilla comes and attacks them. Boom, 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 boom. He's like, fuck this, I won't do this anymore. Then goes back to the city. The girl that the woman he's living with also gets a job. And he's like, I don't want you to get a job. Who's going to look after the child? XYZ, XYZ. At this point as well, they're not declaring their love for each other. Whole lot of, you know, emotional drama happens. Godzilla attacks multiple times, wipes out multiple buildings, multiple people. They then have to rally together. Japan have to rally together and get a group of brave men to attack Godzilla and fuck him up and kill him once and for all. The pilot is part of this. Shit goes down. People die. People live. People think. People survive. You know, things happen. I'm keeping it vague because I want you to watch because I think I should enjoy it.
Okay.
There's destruction everywhere. Godzilla doesn't give a shit about anything. So it's so funny because obviously in the Americanized versions of Godzilla that we've been watching throughout the past couple of years, they portray Godzilla with, I suppose, more of a personality, where he's kind of like got thoughts and feelings, and he teams up with King Kong and he, you know, wants to destroy this robot Godzilla. Blah, 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 blah. And whereas this Godzilla's just like, fuck this, fuck everyone. Everyone's dying. Fuck it, I don't care. and yeah, that's how the whole thing's portrayed. But Godzilla's portrayed as literally just a monster with no personality, whatever, just a monster. And they're like, fuck this guy. We're going to fuck him up. Like, Japan for the win. Boom, 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 boom. And I'll leave it there, because then when you watch it, I think you will enjoy it. I will say, the film is very good. I would say it's the first Godzilla, King Kong, that type of film, kaiju type of film, in probably that I've ever watched where I actually cared about the characters, the humans.
Okay, that's a really positive review.
Yeah, because normally, you know, those films, the Millie Bobby Browns, the Samuel Jacksons of it, like, I think Samuel Jackson was in one of them, characters like that, you don't give a shit about them, and majority of the time I'm like, just get off the screen, like, I just literally just don't care. Whereas this one, I'm like, you know what, there's stuff going on around the Godzilla attacks that is also interesting, and you actually want to you actually want to see and find resolutions for, as well as solving the problem of Godzilla fucking up the whole city. And yeah, there's like really good like character development. Like multiple characters have multiple arcs. Like there's moments that got me like actually a bit like choked up at points. I was like, rah, like I'm actually feeling it. And you know, it helped as well. The visuals were really good. I think at points you could tell that it was like done using like models, which they've kind of like a bit New Hope Star Wars-y, but obviously just kind of like better looking. But still good, still good, still very passable, I would say. But the way they did Godzilla was really cool. All the action involved in Godzilla was really cool. Like all that, the practical stuff was really, really solid. And yeah, man, it's a very good film. And it's one that kind of makes me think, like, why can't, you know, American studios or whatever, Western world studios, produce films of this caliber with the budget that these guys had for this film, which I think he said was like 15 million or something like that. I don't know if he said that.
15 million.
And yeah, it just kind of makes the point that like we've kind of like gotten so, I say we, not us, because we haven't done anything wrong. Hollywood have gotten so obsessed with like big budget blockbuster film and blah 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 blah, and they've forgotten about like just the art of storytelling, the art of writing characters and characters that you care about, characters that you root for. Especially with films like this, where it is just like kaiju. But yeah, so really, really solid film. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes, that was really good. And I think you're absolutely right in terms of Hollywood is obsessed with just smashy, you know. And actually what really lets them down is the characters. And what you pointed out there is you actually, you know, this had some decent character development and you cared about them. And that's a real... My words are failing me today, but it's a real, I want to say boon. It's a really weird word to have sprung into my mind, but like, a real positive. I want to say it better than that, but you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, it's a real endorsement, I think that's what I wanted to say, of the film. So, yes, that's really positive. Presumably, it's in Japanese.
It is in Japanese, yeah.
Did you watch it subbed or dubbed?
I watched it subbed. Yeah, subbed.
Are you generally more of a sub or a dub?
I'm generally, so if we're talking about, so it's weird. So if we're talking about like animated stuff, I am a dub person. Mm-hmm. If we are talking about real people, I am more of a sub person, because looking at real people's faces and their lips and it's not matching their mouth winds me up. So yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you're a grown adult and you can't watch and read and listen at the same time,
yeah,
I'll be watching films.
Yeah.
But no, really good. Cool. I think
you'll enjoy that film.
It's got some really good reviews, and I feel like it also just kind of like came out of nowhere, because I saw something online. It's like, oh, Godzilla Minus One. And like, I kind of assumed it was maybe some sort of like animated tie-in to the whole Godzilla thing that's happening next year,
yeah,
or maybe even this year. Because I was like, oh, maybe they're just saying like this is filling in some of the stuff that we've missed in the Kong franchise. But no, it's probably going to be the best reviewed Godzilla film in the last while, and I'm sure. I think it's Ty West directing it. It's probably kicking himself in the back. That's up there. But, cool. I also love how much you swore to in that review. I was just sitting there laughing to myself. You were like, yeah, he fucking fucked him up, mate. Yeah.
It's really funny, right? So,
sometimes because sometimes I can tell that you're censoring yourself whilst you speak, and other times
you've got to let it fly, man. Sometimes you've got to let it fly.
Because you were passionate about talking about it, so it was clearly coming out. That's so funny. Cool, Godzilla Minus One. That is an endorsement, or a boon, as I said, whatever that bloody word means. But,
I've never heard that word in my life, by the way.
I probably used it way out of context.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just pulled it out of absolutely nowhere.
Okay.
I know. So, erudite. Yeah. What else have we been watching?
I watched The Town for the first time the other day.
Ben Affleck,
yeah. Jeremy Renner and such. Good film. Heist film. Yeah, I love a heist film. I know there's like an extended version of it. I only watched like the theatrical, so the 2-hour version. And I feel like a lot of the film's emotional weight is kind of held on Ben Affleck's relationship with, I have no idea what her name is, but his love interest in the film. And I never really felt like their relationship, I never really felt like they were properly, in love with each other. It always felt kind of, and maybe that was the point of it, but it just never felt like a relationship I could really ever get invested in. And I don't know if that's because maybe in the extended version they have more scenes together or something like that, I don't know. But that was the only thing about the film that I felt was a bit lacking for me. Everything else I thought was great. Like, action was good, storyline was good, characters were interesting. Jeremy Renner plays a really good, like, loyal best friend but also piece of shit type of guy. I really enjoyed his character. He's a piece of shit, but he's also a ride or die, and I can appreciate that. And Glenn, if I rung you up, right, and I said, I need your help. You can't ask what it is. You can never ask me about it again, and we're gonna hurt some people. What do you say?
I'm already there. I'm right next to you.
You're a liar. I've never flagged you. I never flagged you asking questions.
I couldn't not. I'm nosy. I'd be like, just give me a little nugget of info. Yeah, if you tell me I can't tell you, mate, I'm asking you all the questions. If you just don't mention anything, maybe I'll have an off day and not think to ask questions. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. It's a good film. Good heist film. Can you recommend any other heist films that you think are good?
Jeez. There's a heist film where you don't actually ever see the heist. You see the aftermath. Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Reservoir Dogs, yeah.
God, you put me on the spot, OB. I have seen this out, but not for a while, so I will have to rewatch it. Have you ever seen...
I also started watching... Sorry, go ahead. Have you seen Argo? Sorry, just to interrupt you quickly.
I have, but couldn't tell you anything about it.
Okay. I thought I watched boring as hell, but sorry.
Inside Man? I think that's a
film. Right, with Denzel?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good film as well.
That's a good film. I'm just Googling heist films. No, none of them are standing out to me. But yes, I will definitely rewatch that.
That's one of my favourite genres, I feel like, heist films.
Well, from one of your favourite genres to definitely one of your favourite genres, political thriller.
Oh, yeah.
I've been watching... I've watched The Diplomat, which is a Netflix TV show. It's 8 episodes. Season 1 is out. It has been renewed for season 2. It's featuring Kerry Russell, who you might recognise. She's in certain things. It's also got Rufus Sewell, who he's in The Holiday. He's also... Did you ever watch that Netflix show Kaleidoscope?
I started it, but I never finished it.
Well, he's in that as well. He's a British bloke, but he's playing an American. Relatively standard accent. But essentially... I won't spoil anything, but so Kerry Russell plays this sort of career, I don't know what you said, like overseas kind of station chief.
Okay.
You know what Claire Danes' character in Homeland, that's it, kind of like that. So she's always been based in war-torn countries and always done very well to kind of sort those stations out and kind of get key contacts and help take down dictators, things like that. And she is expected to move to Kabul. And her husband is a diplomat who is relatively notorious and not very well liked within the White House because he's a bit unpredictable. Anyway, their marriage is in trouble. She gets basically diverted by the Secretary of State to go to be the ambassador for the US in London. And she's very much like, this is a nothing place. It's just ceremonial. I want to do the work on the ground in Kabul and all this sort of thing. And you find this out in the first episode, so this isn't a spoiler. Mm-hmm. But essentially, she's being groomed to be vice president candidate because the incumbent has some sort of scandal that they're going to have to resign. And she's very much not a vice president candidate. She's sweary. she's very like, she doesn't dress in a, you know, typically feminine way. She's very kind of to the point, direct, and that sort of thing. And plus her marriage is in turmoil, which you don't want for a, vice presidential candidate. So essentially the reason that she's sent to London is because the kind of deputy chief of staff there is really good at shaping people, and so he gets to work with her. And she basically uncovers or starts to uncover various plots and has to work with the what do we call it? The Foreign Office secretary person. Can't remember what they're called over here, but basically British equivalents to kind of like stop terror-related attacks and things like that. So she finds out it's a bit more than she expected it to be in terms of, you know, she didn't think it's not just as boring as she thought it was. That's a roundabout way of saying if you liked Homeland, particularly the first two seasons, if you liked House of Cards, you're going to really like this. It's sharp. It is funny in places, but in a way that is, it's like subtly funny, but it's like a relatable funny, if that makes sense. It's not like out and out jokes, but the characters, obviously it's all very serious, but then they do have a lighter side to them, which makes, to me, I really liked it because it was sort of like, they are bit more human than just these, you know, you're either just super serious all the time and basically have no personality. These characters have personality and, you know, they're all quite likable. The plot is also really engaging in terms of you don't necessarily see where things are going but it never feels cheap. It never feels like, oh, you know, that's unbelievable or, you know, I feel like I've been duped here. It's all really interesting and it ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, which I think it earns and definitely made me want to really look forward to whenever they're going to release season two. So I think you'd really like it. It's called The Diplomat.
Mm.
Please give it a watch and we can talk about it.
Yeah, add it to the list. I have seen it on Netflix and thought, oh, I feel like I'd like this, but never actually just gotten around to watching it. So yeah, your endorsement means I'll push it to the top.
Cool, definitely.
Mm.
What are you going to be watching that's upcoming?
So, I want to see, made a list actually, 1 second.
I've come prepared.
I want to see Ferrari, still need to watch Ferrari. I want to see The Boy and the Heron. And if I have time, maybe try and watch one of, because I won't watch it both, either Priscilla or One Life, the Anthony Hopkins one. They look interesting. And then also there was a film on Amazon Prime, which was out at London Film Festival, which I wanted to go and see, but I couldn't get a ticket to see it. But it's a film called Foe, with which just came out on Prime, with Paul Mescal, I think, is his name, and Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
And the trailer looks pretty cool. It's like, it looks like it's like a, you know, like a bottle episode of a TV show. It's like that sort of thing, with a, but in film form, about like a couple where it's like in the near distant future, a couple who seem pretty like, you know, simple folk, a guy from the government comes and says to one of, to the husband, we want you to go and live in space so we can test people living in space. And then they want to replace him with like an AI version, even though I hate AI, an AI version of him for your wife kind of thing. And then they debate about, you know, whether or not that he should go and how that the marriage is going and what's going to happen when the AI comes and blah, 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 blah. And it's just pretty interesting, so I'm going to give it a shot.
Did you call it a bottle episode?
Yeah, if so, like, in a TV series, a bottle episode would be like, you know what a bottle episode is. Right?
Do you mean like a filler?
No, like, so like a bottle episode, like, where they have, when TV shows are trying to save money, so they would just have all the regular cast in one set, and they would just make in one room basically, and they would just make the episode about that, whatever's going on in that room. They wouldn't go to other places, they would just have that kind of thing.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
But yeah, in film form it seems, because it seems like it's just like three or four characters in the entire film, so it looks pretty cool. So I want to give that a shot.
Nice. I am awaiting the release of Poor Things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've heard good things.
Yorgos Lanthimos film with Emma Stone. I think that's also going to be odd and probably oddly sexual, because that's kind of what he does. So, yeah. But, yes, I have to be very choosy about what I go and watch now.
Yeah, first. Now you got a family.
yeah, until I can start showing my son films, that will be... I'll look forward to doing that, but he doesn't have the attention span yet. So.
No.
This time.
Very soon.
Have I asked you this? What should the, like, realistically, what should the first film I show him be? I'm sure you would say The Lion King.
Donnie Darko.
Actually, I think you did say The Lion King, and I was like, but don't they kill his father in that?
Yeah,
I don't want him to show him that.
No, I guess not. What about... I always really liked The Fox and the Hound. I always thought that was a really good Disney film, and that nobody really speaks about. And it's kind of about like two guys who were friends, then they realised they were different, so they had to stop being friends, but in the end they come back together and they're friends.
Might have to be Hercules, you know.
Hercules is a shout, to be fair.
That's my favourite animated film.
Good songs as well. Oh
yeah, absolutely. Also secretly fancied the woman.
There's
cool. Right, well, great chatting to you about this. We will reconvene soon. I will try and watch some more What If. You try and watch The Diplomat. And yes. Yeah, we will
chat. I assume we'll probably watch Echo by the time.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. So we'll chat about that. Probably have watched all of it. Hopefully Chris will have time to watch some of it as well. Cool. All right. Well, you can follow us on social media. We're on X at YZPodcast17. We're on Instagram and TikTok as Rare Fish Critics. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where we are your average critics.